I just remember going back to that and thinking about, you know, what it means to be around Halloween, especially for kids. And I thought, you know, as weird as it may seem, maybe the most authentic time in my life was on Halloween. And maybe for you, the most authentic time for you was Halloween. And the reason why I submit that to you is this. On Halloween, we dress up, we act like, and we take upon the role of a certain character, okay? Like I was talking to two young boys here this morning, you know, one's going to be a ninja and one's going to be Darth Vader. And I'm like, see, they didn't pick Fred Flintstone. You know, they were smarter than me, you know, pick something cool, you know, I can attack you at any moment. And, you know, you look at that and you realize that for one evening a year, kids take upon a certain look and they're going to do a certain thing and they're going to be somebody and they're going to take upon that role. And I thought, you know, maybe life is more like that in the fact that we kind of live life like it's a big masquerade party. That masks really aren't just for Halloween. That someone sees us that we know and says, hey, how are things going? And what do we say? Fine. What you been up to? Oh, just the same old, same old. And we're probably not really being authentic with that. Now, I'm not saying that every single time that somebody asks you, hey, how are you doing? Say, well, sit down here because I've got an hour's worth of grief to tell you about. Okay, that's probably not what you always want to do because then people are not going to ask you anymore. But, you know, we kind of get into this rhythm of just always, well, that's the answer that you give. And it's probably not real authentic, is it? Because there are those days that when someone asks you, how are you doing, that though you give the answer of fine, it's really not fine. And that maybe that life is more like the other 364 days rather than Halloween, where we just kind of go inauthentically around and everything's fine and this is the way that life is and I'm not going to tell anybody what I'm really struggling with and I'm not going to tell anybody what I'm really battling and I'm not going to tell somebody when something's really going well. I'm just going to give the same answer as fine. And so we're kind of like the kids the rest of the 364 days that we're just kind of all over the place. But you know something? I think God has called us to live authentic lives. And I think God has called us to live and be who we are and be who he has created us to be. And unfortunately, the only night of the year it seems like that we actually become the thing that we want to become is Halloween. And God doesn't want us to live like that. God wants us to be who he has created us to be. And it's like we have treated life as kind of like this Halloween party that we're always something that we're really not, you know. I don't know many people that go around on Halloween and just say, I just decided to be me this year, you know. Because, man, they're going to be the brunt of a lot of jokes, you know. They're going to be the brunt of a lot of jokes. What is it that God has created us to be? Who has he created us to be? What has he designed us to be? I want us to look at Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3, we're going to look at the life of Moses, okay? Exodus chapter 3, I want you to look at verse 11. We're going to actually start in verse 10, I'm sorry. Moses has seen this burning bush off out in the distance, and it's not just your typical burning bush that's being consumed. This one is on fire, but yet it is not being consumed. I don't know about you, but that would get my attention. I'd want to know what was going on. And look at what happens here. God begins to speak to him out of the bush, and in verse 10, he looks at Moses, and this is what he says. Now go, for I am sending you to Pharaoh. You will lead my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. And verse 11, but who am I to appear before Pharaoh? Moses asked God, how can you expect me to lead the Israelites out of Egypt? You know, let's just kind of stop there for just a second and look at several of these things. And I'm going to go down through several different verses. And we're going to go down through every one of Moses' protests. And then we're going to look at what God's response is. And more than likely, what we're going to find out is Moses probably gives the same protests we do. And there's a lot within Moses that's within us. And sometimes I think that we take the biblical characters and we kind of raise them to this godlike status that they really don't deserve. And it's not to say that we need to bash the people in the Bible, but I think that we have elevated them to such a level that we think, well, that was Moses. I can never be Moses. And I think what you're going to discover today, as much as we've watched Moses on TV, you know, with Charlton Heston, you know, let my people go. Sounded so eloquent, you know, when he said it. It's not Moses. That's Charlton Heston. It's not Moses. Moses didn't look like that. He didn't act like that. He didn't have this, I am Charlton Heston with a nice tan, you know, playing Moses with my, you know, little staff. That's not Moses. Not even close. Let's look at what happens here in verse 12. Then God told him, I will be with you, and this will serve as proof that I have sent you. When you have brought the Israelites out of Egypt, you will return here to worship God at this very mountain. Now let's look at the first protest here, because this is what Moses does. And he asks this question. You're going to notice that he keeps kind of asking this question in different ways. But his first protest is this. Who am I? Who am I? You ever thought about that before? You know, God, what am I doing here? What is my purpose? But Moses even goes to a further extent, more than just asking, who am I and what is my purpose? He asks the question, who am I really? See, because if you know the story, you know that before this, Moses grew up in Pharaoh's court. In other words, he is a prince of Egypt. And Moses did the unthinkable and killed another man, and Pharaoh found out about it. And when Pharaoh found out about it, he decided, I'm going to kill Moses. And so Moses flees out to the desert, and he becomes a shepherd. And so there's this huge push and pull in Moses' life of, am I a prince of Egypt or am I just a shepherd? And he finally chooses the mask of, I'm just a shepherd. And God appears to him and says, Moses, you're the one I've chosen. You need to go tell Pharaoh to let my people go. And Moses immediately says, who am I? I mean, he could have just stopped right there. Who am I to go before Pharaoh? Who am I really? And God gives him an incredible response there. He says, I will be with you. Now, I don't know about for you, but that's just not good enough for me. When God's trying to tell me to go before a king, and that king knows that I have murdered someone, okay, I'm a wanted person, I will be with you may not be good enough. And I'm thinking in my own life, it's probably not good enough. And here's the interesting part about what God gives him as a sign. Did you notice when the sign occurs? After he goes. That's not much of a sign. I'm kind of the guy that likes the sign preceding the event, not after the event. And God goes, well, hey, here's how you're going to know. After you go to Pharaoh and you lead the people out, you will come to this mountain to worship. That's not a sign. That's after the fact. I want a sign preceding. And you're probably a lot like Moses. It's like, well, I would really like something before I kind of go, rather than your sign will be, and then, I mean, I'm sure Moses was like, oh, this is going to be great. After you lead him out, you'll come back to this mountain to worship. And you know, Moses had to be just sitting there thinking, man, this is so not good enough. This is so woefully short. And you know something, I in my life, and maybe you are too, and I don't want to just speak for you, I'm more like Moses on this side of things. You know, who am I to go and do this thing? God may be calling you to a certain task or calling you out of a comfort zone. You may be saying, who am I? And God's going to look at you and say this very type of thing, because this is what he always does with humanity. After you choose to go, then I'll show up. And you know something? We just don't like that, do we? We don't like that. We want to know beforehand. We want to see God's hand beforehand, and God says, no, it's not the way I'm going to do things. I want you to look at his second protest down in verse 13. But Moses protested, if I go to the people of Israel and tell them the God of your ancestors has sent me to you, they won't believe me. They will ask, which God are you talking about? What is his name? Then what should I tell them? Then here's God's response. God replied, I am the one who always is. Just tell them, I am has sent me to you. Now, did you catch what happened again? Moses again asked the question, who am I? That's his real question. Who am I to go before Pharaoh? And then look in verse 13. If I go to the people of Israel and tell them the God of your ancestors has sent me to you, they won't believe me. In other words, who am I to go to them? They're not going to believe me. They're not going to get it. And then God does one of his God things again. And look at his response. God replied, I am the one who always is. What kind of a response is that when someone asks you, who are you? Well, the I am one sent me. That makes no sense at all. That's not going to be able to, you know, negotiate with somebody. And it's not going to be able to convince someone that you're really who you say you are. But isn't it interesting that what he's really doing is Moses is now asking the question, who am I really? And God answers with, I am. As a matter of fact, the Hebrew literally means this, I will be what I have been. That's not much of a thing to go on. I mean, if someone's really pressing you and saying, now, are you sure God spoke to you? And if you say, well, the guy who said, I am, or the guy who said, I will be what I've been is the one that sent me, you would say, no deal. No deal. I don't know this person. And you notice that while Moses is trying to say, I don't know who I am, God is saying that really doesn't matter. It's all about me. It's not about you, Moses. It's not about you at all. You know, when you think about identity, especially with God, and that's where Moses is totally tripping up, and that's where we trip up is, well, who am I to go do this, or who am I to, people won't buy into this, or I don't think I can do that, or that would really cost me something. And God keeps coming back with, I'm going to be with you. I am the I am. I'm the one that's always been and always will be. I'm going to be right there. You're going to take upon my identity. And that's the way God deals with things. When we thought about Gateway and what Gateway would become and what would Gateway be known for. The thing that I didn't want as a pastor is to be known for a building, you know, if we build a building one day or whatever that we do with those types of things. I don't want to be a museum, you know. I don't want to be a pretty building. Everybody goes, oh man, you got to go down there and look at their architecture. I mean, that's great and good, but who are their people? Are they making any difference in the community? And the question would be is this, if a church, let's just say Gateway, folded up next week, would the community miss us at all? And you take any church anywhere, and the point is, if you ask that question, would the community even notice? Or would the community even care? Would the community go, man, we can't lose that church. They're doing a lot around here. They're helping out. And if you're just known for your building, they're going to say, wow, this will make a great museum. It's pretty sad, isn't it? And a lot of churches, that's the road they've chosen to go down. And we were determined from the very beginning, we don't want to go down that road. What identity are we going to be? I don't know if you've been watching some of the news stories that's been on with the San Diego fires and the California fires. Has most of you seen this? Okay, know that it's going on. And your heart just goes out to those people because it's like, wow, man, they're losing their houses. They're losing their homes. They're totally displaced. They can't just go back next week and set up shop. It's going to take years to rebuild. What are some of those people going to do? I want you to know, because of our partnerships and who we're partnered with and who helped get Gateway started and things like that, every single week when you give, there is a portion of our money that goes to missions, and part of that goes to direct efforts right now in San Diego. And the reason why we chose to be a part of those partnerships is for that very reason. We didn't want Gateway just to be about Gateway and about downtown or even just about Cleveland, but we wanted to make an impact worldwide. And so we chose to partner with certain places and certain organizations so that when these things happen, we're not as a church scrambling to figure out, okay, what are we going to do? Should we take up a special offering? And how do we know if we take up that offering that it'll get to that certain point? And then who's taking care of it there? The week that these fires started happening, our partners were already on the ground. So every single time that you give, it's not that the money stays all here. It goes to worldwide efforts, and one of those is disaster relief teams in San Diego that's on the ground. I can take you to their websites and show you pictures of exactly what they're doing. Every single day, because of your contributions and other contributions of churches that choose to partner with organizations like this, they're feeding 40,000 meals a day. They're giving showers to about 1,000 to 2,000 people a day. And you're a part of that every single time you give, so that when you look on the TV and you're like, man, I wish I could help out, you are. It's kind of cool, isn't it, to know that, man, I can give here and yet it's going to help out there. That was one of the identities we wanted from the very beginning, was that we weren't just going to be this myopic church that just thought about us and who we are and, well, somebody out in San Diego, they can just take care of themselves. One of the guys that helped me to see the vision for downtown and was our church launching director is now planning churches out in San Diego, and he and his wife just went out there. He was in Cleveland for 2 years. He knows Cleveland very well. He knows Gateway. He gets our prayer updates all the time. Guess what? He's one of our contacts now out there. That's where some of the money is now going to, is to help a guy like him and a guy like and a lady like his wife to make those impacts and make those changes and to help people. So I want you to understand that the identity that we wanted from the very beginning was to make sure that we not only impacted here locally, but globally as well. You received, hopefully, when you walked in this morning, this little stapled together piece. Did everybody kind of get one of those? If not, they're back at the information table, but I want you to check this out. There's a couple of ways that you can make an impact around this Thanksgiving and Christmas season. There's little kids all over the world just have nothing. You know that. I don't have to convince you of that. But you can make an impact in such a really small but amazing way. There's an organization that's actually through Franklin Graham. It's Billy Graham's son. They're called Samaritan's Purse, but he does this thing called Operation Christmas Child. You've probably even seen it on television. It's usually on a couple of times that they're taking up collections. And what you can simply do is this, and you can do this through your growth group, through your small group, or through the church here, whichever way that you want to do it. You just simply take a shoebox, any shoebox, okay? It doesn't matter if you need a shoebox, we'll help you find a shoebox. And in here it tells you exactly what to put in those gift ideas, okay? There's all these gift ideas as to what you can put in that box. You fill it with all types of goodies. It tells you what not to put in there, okay? You fill that box. If you want to wrap it, you can wrap it. Just don't wrap the box together. In other words, wrap the top separately than the box, so that when they need to ship this, okay, because it always has to be open, all right, by other countries because they're letting things inside their country, they're going to inspect it just to make sure there's not anything in there that's not supposed to be in there. So wrap the lid separately, put all these things in there, put about $7 is what they ask you to put inside of an envelope in there. Mark whether you're doing this for a boy or a girl. All of that stuff's in these pages. You can bring it here to the church, have it here by I think it's Sunday, November the 11th, okay? Or you can take it through one of your growth groups. It's an easy, easy way to give a kid on the other side of the world a great Christmas. It's easy to do. If you want to do 10 of them, you can do 10 of them. If you want to do one, or if you want to go together with a bunch of people from work and do these things, do it. I mean, people love doing this sort of thing to give kids something. Another way that you can be involved is we're going to adopt a few families, I hope, from Westside Ecumenical Ministry. Most of these parents only earn about $10,000 to $12,000 a year, and I'm not kidding you, okay? And I know that a lot of times when Thanksgiving comes around, we have a big Thanksgiving. You probably have a pretty big Thanksgiving dinner, and these people, chances are, unless they get some help, won't. And so if you want to be a part of that, aside from your regular giving, just put on the envelope or on your check Thanksgiving in the memo, and we'll make sure that that money goes directly to giving these people a great Thanksgiving. And we're going to take them to the store if you want to go with us to do so. We're going to meet them somewhere. We're going to make sure that we buy them a great Thanksgiving meal, take it back to their place, and make sure that their Thanksgiving goes really well. And so when we talk about identity of a church, when we talk about identity of who a Christian is supposed to be, these are some of the things that's supposed to be marks of it. Not just somebody that goes to church. Anybody can show up for church, okay? Anybody can do that. But it takes a different kind of person to have a change of heart, a change of lifestyle, and say, you know something, I'm going to make sure that I'm a giver and not just a getter. I'm going to make sure that I identify with what Christ would have me to be. And you know something? That's the identity that a Christian is supposed to be. And the sad part is, if you ask people on the street, what do you think of a Christian? That's not usually the first words that come out of their mouth. There's a lot of negative words, sometimes some positive words, but for the most part, not a whole lot of negative. And I want you to know that at Gateway, that's not who we want to be identified as. We want to be identified as a church that, hey, if you want to do something, go over there. If you want to impact some inner city things, go over there. If you want to plant some flowers and trees downtown, go over there. If you want to be a part of Operation Christmas Child and helping kids all around the world, go over there. If you want to help give to where that you know that your money's going to not just local but global things as well, that's where you need to give. And you know, when you look at a guy like Moses, he struggled with his identity. Who am I? And maybe you struggle with your identity. Who am I supposed to be? What am I supposed to be? Let's look at the third protest. Third protest happens in chapter 4, verse 1. But Moses protested again. Look, they won't believe me. They won't do what I tell them. They'll just say the Lord never appeared to you. Now, let's just stop right there. Isn't that a valid comment? I mean, how many burning bushes have you seen? How many burning bushes have you even known about? The only one who's ever claimed a burning bush is Moses, that I'm aware of. So in the history of the world, that's it. That's all we've got. It's a valid comment. It's a valid complaint to God. Look, when I tell them I saw a burning bush and God supposedly spoke to me, they're not going to believe me. This is a valid protest. Look at the response in verse 2. And the Lord asked him, what do you have there in your hand? A shepherd's staff, Moses replied. Throw it down on the ground, the Lord told him. So Moses threw it down and it became a snake. Moses was terrified, so he turned and he ran away. And you know what goes on here in these first few verses? What begins to happen is this. Moses is told to put his hand inside of his coat, okay, inside of his robe here. And when he pulls it out, his hand turns to leprosy. A little freaky. And God says, hey, put it back in there. And he puts it back in there. And when he pulls it back out, he's totally healed. And God said, I'm going to do those two signs just for you, Moses. And a third one, just because, Moses, that I know it sounds like you're going to need it. And he said, just take a pitcher of water. And when you pour it out, it's going to turn into blood. That's going to prove to them, Moses. That's going to prove to them. I want you to look at the next one in verse 10. Fourth protest. But Moses pleaded with the Lord, oh Lord, I'm just not a good speaker. I never have been, and I'm not now. Even after you have spoken to me, I'm clumsy with words. Do you see the protest again is, who am I? Do you not understand? I'm a terrible speaker. And so that's why Moses was not like Charlton Heston. Now, if they would have taken Charlton Heston and made him stutter and stammer and do a terrible speech, that would have been Moses. But instead, when you watch the Ten Commandments, man, it was always this great oratory. It wasn't Moses. Most scholars believe that he had a stuttering problem. So you can hear him going to Pharaoh and people laughing at him. Moses hadn't changed. He still stutters. God really appeared to him in a burning bush. He can't even talk. And he knows it. Moses has probably been made fun of all of his life. Even as a prince of Egypt, people probably snickering over in the corner. You can't even complete a sentence. And isn't that what you and I usually do? Well, God, I can't do that. That involves getting up in front of people. I don't think that's a good idea at all. Let's just fast forward ahead. What else does God have for me? And here's God's response. God's starting to get a little testy. Verse 11, who makes mouths? Who makes people so they can speak or not speak, hear or not hear, see or not see? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go and do as I have told you. I will help you speak well, and I will tell you what to say. kind of tough, isn't it? Let me ask you, in your own personal life, have you pulled back from God because you're like, oh, I don't see how God could use me to do any of that? Maybe you're a young professional and you're at your work and you're like, I'm just going to kind of be quiet about God and stuff because who knows what somebody else might say or do. And when spiritual things come up, and they do at work, people do talk about those things, I'm not going to say a whole lot. I'm just going to be a nice person. And because I'm a nice person, people are going to know automatically that I'm a Christian. Listen, I know lots of nice people who have nothing to do with God. It has nothing to do with being a believer or not. And maybe you kind of slink back and you kind of go, I don't think I'll say very much. And you ask the question, who am I to really say anything to them? I mean, I don't want to look arrogant like I know everything and that I know God, so I just won't say anything. And Moses' question, you know, and statement is, look, I'm just not a good speaker. You need to let me out of this room. Look, I just can't, even now, I can't even hardly talk. God says, hey, who made mouths? Who made mouths? Who made ears to hear? I'm going to give you the words. Don't worry about that. Get going. And then finally, Moses says what we all really mean to say to God. Fifth protest in verse 13. But Moses again pleaded, Lord, please send someone else. Right? Send somebody else. Surely there's somebody else out there that's going to do this. And God looks at us and says, no, I chose you for this purpose. I chose you. And look at his response in verses 14 to 17. Then the Lord became angry with Moses. All right, he said, what about your brother Aaron the Levite? He is a good speaker, and look, he is on his way to meet you now. And when he sees you, he will be very glad. You will talk to him, giving him the words to say. I will help both of you to speak clearly, and I will tell you what to do. Aaron will be your spokesman to the people, and you will be his God to him, telling him what to say. And be sure to take your shepherd's staff along so you can perform the miraculous signs I have shown you. You know something, I think so many times that if you've ever been at that stoplight before, that there's a lady in front of you who is still doing her morning makeup, okay? And that may be you ladies. All right. And the light changes, but yet they're still, you know. Right? Okay. You've seen this. This, like I say, ladies, this may be you. And you just want to roll down the window, you know, or hit the power button. Hey, it doesn't get any greener than this, you know. You know. And that's what we're screaming, at least on the inside. And a lot of times if the windows are up, we're like, it doesn't get any good. Of course, on the outside, you just see. So they don't really know what you're doing, you know, but they can see in their mirrors, and it's like, oh, they're getting up. Oh, yeah, well, yeah, it is green. You know, they finally go, and you miss the light because they weren't paying any attention. And you know something? I think a lot of times God is looking at us and going, hey, it doesn't get any greener than this. It doesn't get any greener than this. I can't give you any more signs. This is all you're getting. And Moses does the classic response that we all do. Lord, send somebody else. Just send somebody else. I don't want to do this. And in our own lives, each one of us have those Moses-type moments. And like I say, we have elevated some of these guys to such a lofty position that, you know, Charlton Heston is Moses. Whatever. He didn't look anything like that, and he didn't act anything like that, and he certainly didn't talk like that. As a matter of fact, he had to always tell Aaron, here's what you're supposed to say. And Aaron was the one who would say, this is what God is saying through Moses. Weakness. And yet the question that every single time, except for the last protest, that Moses keeps coming back to is I don't really know who I am. I don't know if I'm the shepherd. I don't know if I'm the prince. I don't know who I really am. And I would just rather stay as a shepherd because at least I know what I'm going to get. And that's where we usually like to live. And God is saying, like he did to Jeremiah, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before I formed you, I knew everything about you. I knew your likes and dislikes. See, some of us are still discovering that, aren't we? As we get older, we never figure everything else about ourselves. And finally, we get to, you know, maybe some food that we've never tasted before, and we go, oh, I've never had that before. I really like that. And then other times we go, wow, that was really bad, but we don't have the honesty to tell our wife that that was really bad, so we lie and say, it was great, honey. You know, where's the dog? You know, and we find out things about ourselves, and we find out later on we have talents and gifts and abilities that we never knew that was in us. I'd met a lady one time that was cutting my hair, and she was in her mid-60s. She is over in the Westlake area. And I looked at her one time, and I was like, hey, what is all these paintings and stuff that you've, you know, done up here? And she goes, oh, this is something I've gotten into recently. Man, it was incredible. I was like, have you always been able to do this? And she goes, no. 2 years ago, I took a painting class, and now then look at this. 60-something years. She never even knew that she could do it. She goes, I love it. I can't get away from it. And you know what God would have said to her? Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. I already knew that this was inside of you. But she had to take a risk to go take an art class to see if she could do this. And she goes, I was so scared. On my first day, I didn't know what I was doing. And then the next day was a little bit better, and the next day a little bit better. And finally she goes, look at what I can do. This is amazing. She goes, I still look back and go, how do I do this? Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. You know, we've got a little kid on the way. Josiah, he's supposed to be here in 6 weeks. We really don't want him any earlier than that, you know, because that's a lot of complications and stuff. So about 6 weeks from now, he's supposed to be here. And you know something? We're going to discover a lot of things about Josiah, you know. We're going to discover, you know, his little toes. Do they look like mommy's toes or daddy's toes? And, you know, does his nose look like mine or Sherry's or somebody else's in the family? And we're going to discover all these things about him. His little laugh, his little cry. We're going to know it different than anybody else's, you know, than Elias's and all these other babies that we're having around here. And everything's going to be unique. But you know something? God already knows every single one of those things. And we're going to find out what he's good at and what he's not so good at. And we're going to have those sit-down talks one day where we go, you know, Josiah, sometimes things in life just don't work out. You know, this may not be your thing. But if you want to keep at it, we'll be there to support you. But Josiah is going to find out things about him. But God, before he formed him in the womb, already knew what Josiah would be great at and what he wouldn't be so great at. And it's up to us as parents to help guide him along in those things and to encourage him to try and risk and to be out there and to try new things so that there may be something that God places within Josiah that Sherry and I would have never even thought was a possibility. God, before he formed us, and he looks at Moses, and he looks at you and I, and he says, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. I know the purposes that I have for you. And we've got to be willing to take those risks. Real quickly, three objections that I think most of us go through. Real quick. If I follow God, I have to become weird, right? If I follow God, I'm going to have to become real weird. And I think God will look at you and say, no, I'm asking you to take the mask off. I'm asking you not to masquerade around. I'm asking you to become authentic. I'm going to reveal the true identity of who you really are. Second objection that I usually hear from people is this. If I follow God, I can't really be happy. And I want you to know that while we've been sold in our culture that happiness is the ultimate goal, we all probably have discovered or at least watched or beginning to realize that happiness is really kind of unobtainable. You can be happy for moments, but you can't be happy for all time. Because you could get a phone call today that changes your happiness into utter depression, and we all know it. And what God has said is that the goal of life is not necessarily happiness, because that may or may not happen. You may get it in moments, but you're probably not going to get a lifetime of happiness. The goal is to be fulfilled. And I think that's what we all are craving for, is to be fulfilled in our work, to be fulfilled in our family, to be fulfilled in who we are as a person. And that's what God promises to those who follow after him. And the third objection that I usually hear is this. If I follow God, I have to leave and go to the jungle somewhere, fight mosquitoes, eat bugs, and try to talk to the natives about Christ, okay? Now, that may happen, all right? And some people, that's all that they're created to do, and they love it. And we look at them and we go, and we're going to support you financially because I am not called to that. I want you to know, in less than two weeks now, there's a guy that's going to be here in Cleveland, and he's going to be leveraging businessmen, businesswomen from all over Cleveland to help out with church planting, just like with Gateway. We are kind of one of their model churches, if you want to call it that. And the guy that's coming in to do that, his name is Al Weiss. He's president of Disney World. He's the CEO there. He's over 100,000 employees and over all their cruise lines. He's flying into Cleveland. He will spend a day with a bunch of businessmen. And what he's basically going to tell them is, guys, you need to be given a lot of money for church planting all over Cleveland. That's how you're going to transform Cleveland. You know, a lot of people look at a guy like that and go, so he didn't leave his job? No. So what's he doing? He's taking the influence that he has and he's leveraging it. And he's not just doing it in Cleveland. He's targeted the top 50 cities in America. And this is what he does. He leverages his job. You may say, now, wait a second. Let me get this straight. Mickey and Minnie are helping to do church planting across the United States. That is correct. This guy's giving millions of dollars to make it happen. Mason, no. So what you're saying is he is figuring out who his identity is, and it's bigger than just being the COO of all of Disney. That is correct. His identity, one of the purposes in his life, is to leverage who he is for not just the magic kingdom, but for God's kingdom. Pretty big time, huh? It's pretty amazing. He's going to be right in here in a couple of weeks, right inside of Pickwick, talking to a bunch of guys and saying, hey, this is the way things need to be. Never met the man. He doesn't even know who I am. When he leaves here, he probably won't remember me at all. But you know something? I have great admiration for a guy like that because he knows that not every Christ follower is called to be in the jungles. But every Christ follower is called to leverage where they are, who they are, and his identity is in that. Before God formed Al Weiss in the womb, he knew one of his purposes, certainly to be up in Disney, but to utilize that for God's kingdom. And he's given millions of dollars to plant churches all across America. And he could have just built him a big house and been happy and give to his local church and that'd be it. You know, God knows your true identity. I don't know it. He does. He's going to call you to some things. You're going to say, whoa, I don't know how to do that. That's a big vision when you think about what Al Weiss is doing, and it's very risky. Very risky because some people could get really upset and say, hey, you know, he doesn't need to be doing that. He needs to, you know, stick down there in Disney World and do his thing down there. But here's what a lot of people don't know. Al Weiss's daddy was a church planter. Before he was formed in the womb, God knew, this is the home that I want this guy to be in because he's going to have a heart for churches. He's going to have a heart for my kingdom, and I'm going to place him in the magic kingdom. So buy more Disney products, right? Okay. So that church planting can occur all across the United States. Now that is a great vision, and that's an identity worth living out. You and I don't think anybody in here is the COO or somewhere even near to Disney. But you know something? It's still the same. God still calls us. He still calls us. But a lot of times, if you're like me, Lord, send somebody else. I don't want to go do that. Let's everyone bow our heads and close our eyes this morning. Lord, it's tough when we have to kind of give up our Halloween mask and to reveal who we truly are. And Lord, I know that you've not called us to be weird, but you have called us to be different. And different doesn't always have to be weird. Different can be helping people have Thanksgiving meals that might have had a small one, but not as good a one as what we're going to have. And following you means giving kids on the other side of the world that we will probably never meet in this lifetime a fun Christmas where they open up a shoebox full of stuff that we can buy at the dollar store that really didn't do a whole lot for us, but for them probably represents a year's worth of wages from their parents. God, maybe being different, what you've called us to do is to leverage our relationships and to share with someone else, not in a judgmental or ugly, hateful sort of way, but just to say, hey, you know, this is what I believe. And so, Lord, help us with the identity that you have for us. Help us to remember that Moses was out in the desert, just a shepherd, and God came to him and said, Moses, this is not your identity. Your identity is more than a shepherd. Your identity is someone who's going to change the course of history that people thousands and thousands and thousands of years later are still talking about, even if they don't believe in God. People still know the story of Moses. And so, Father, we just ask you to right now, just to challenge our hearts, to challenge us to become authentic, to take off those masks, and to be who you've called us to be. And God, that we would claim that verse that before you formed us in the womb, you knew everything about us. That you're not going to call us something that you're not going to equip us to do. And Lord, help us to realize that even though we may go through times of failure, that when we are faithful to you, that we are always successful. So Father, just help us to find out our true identity. In Jesus' name. Amen. I want everybody just to take these next few moments. Maybe you want to give a gift, maybe that Thanksgiving gift or your regular gift to Gateway. You can just put that in the in those popcorn boxes. Maybe you really want to think about your true identity. Maybe God's been calling you to something and you've just said, no, I'll send somebody else. I'll wait for somebody else to volunteer. You need to step up. Maybe it's to go with us on the mission trip when we go to Uganda in the late spring. That meeting's coming up in just a couple weeks. Go check it out. See if God's calling you to it. You may say, well, what are we going to be doing there? Well, here's what I always known with every mission trip. Whatever they say to you that you're going to do, sometimes that happens, but a lot of times things change. And just learning to be flexible and going with it and going to do what God calls you to do, not what you've got on paper. And that may be the risk that some of you need to take. They say, well, I don't know about this. Uganda? I don't speak their language. The other side of the world? Lord, please send somebody else. But why don't you just take the next few moments just to reflect upon what God is calling you to, but most importantly, what God is calling you to be.